You're on. Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I will call to order. Let's see. Today is the 19th of October already. Holy smokes. And I just have a couple opening comments before we get into our fairly light agenda. I just got back last night from a meeting in Chicago for the Gas Technology Institute, and I wanted to spend a tiny bit of time talking to my colleagues about this, and to the extent it might be of interest to any members of the media. The Gas Technology Institute is a nonprofit organization that does a lot of research on gas-related issues. They really research distribution systems. They research, to some extent, the production of gas and look into ways to make it more efficient and more environmentally sound, and end-use energy efficiency stuff. They've come up with some of the most widely used consumer products, energy efficient furnaces, water heaters. They're working on all that kitchen equipment for industrial use. They just have a pretty amazing facility out in Chicago for all of this type of research, and they are doing some pretty impressive things that the industry doesn't want to do, or it might take, like, some of their projects have taken 30 years to develop and maybe don't have a huge beneficial market in terms of making money, but are really important for safety and other issues. So this organization has been around for a number of decades doing that kind of research, and they have an advisory board, and that's what I'm serving on, along with a number of other commissioners. There's academics on there. There's environmentalists. There's industry folks. So it's a pretty diverse group, and they meet a couple times a year. And I was invited by Travis Cavula. And NARUC has a certain number of positions to serve on there, and they wanted North Dakota represented as a gas-producing state. So there's only one other gas-producing state on there and in terms of commissioners. And so I'm proud to carry that mantle, and I can say that it's always eye-opening when you engage in policy-type discussions with a national group because you realize how isolated you are in North Dakota. We don't think like most places, and it reminds me that we need to stay engaged and continue to have this voice of reason, I believe, heard on these national levels. Some of the research that this organization is doing, I talked about the furnaces, the water heaters. They do a lot of pipeline safety research, too. They do a lot of investigation when pipes break. They get sent to this location to figure out what caused the break. They're doing a ton of research on the new plastic pipes and how they're joined together, the fittings. It's so different than with steel and the welding, and it's a new, relatively new procedure. People aren't widely trained to perform it correctly. It has to be done very specifically and in order to have a good bond. And so there's a lot of work being done on how to improve that process and how to get that information out further to the workers and the industry as a whole. And they've developed a new tape that can be used to trace plastic piping. And apparently some of the metal tape has a lightning factor that can attract lightning, the tracer wire, and then compromise the plastic pipe. And so this organization has developed this new pipe, tracing tape that can be used for the old plastic pipe that's down the ground or new stuff. So that's kind of an important area of work. They do a lot of natural gas vehicle work. And two things that I found most interesting, they are doing one of the only, if not the only, hydraulic fracturing test site in the country. And so they have this site in Texas. It's an oil drilling site, and they've got three wells drilled, and they have got a bunch of companies that invested, along with the federal Department of Energy, an $80 million grant, I believe, or maybe it was $35 million, but they are going in and taking out a core of the fractured rock. Never been done before. They've never really looked at the rock after it's been fractured to see how did the fractures work and how did they, you know, there's so many different things to identify with the fracturing of the rock. And really the conclusions were that all of the assumptions have been wrong. That's what they've learned so far. And so this is the kind of thing that really has promise for the long term in terms of development of both oil and the shale gas in the country, is really understanding how the fracturing works and how we can make it more efficient and how we can reduce the number of drills we need so that we're reducing the environmental impact and can continue to develop this resource nationwide. So that hydraulic fracturing test site was amazing. I'm going to be working with Ron Ness and the oil and gas, see if there's any interest to try to get a site up here, because each deposit of the geology is different, and you really kind of need to understand the geology specific to the play in the region. So I'll work with those guys and maybe be talking to you guys down the road about that as well. And then we got the first report on the Aliso Canyon storage site leak. The scientist who was doing the big report and the big study on what caused that and how to prevent those types of things gave us a report during the meeting on some of the initial findings. So that was really fascinating. We'll trigger some conversations with MDU on some of their storage facilities and really brought to light how unregulated those facilities have always been and what types of regulations maybe PHMSA might be looking at in the future and what kind of questions we should be asking our utilities about their storage sites and how they're how they are maintained and used and really even just how they're set up. So that was a fascinating report, and a lot of it was embargoed, so we didn't get into the real nuts and bolts of it, but we learned enough to be able to be more informed about the questions to ask about some of these storage facilities and how they're used and how they're maintained. So it was a very worthwhile trip, and it brought to light one thing that I hadn't realized. We've talked a lot about how with the Clean Power Plant, coal is under fire, and there's been, you know, kind of backroom talk about how, yeah, once coal's out of the mix, gas will be next. Well, based on what I heard, gas is here. Like, there is an active group of folks nationwide already trying to eliminate gas from the mix. And my commissioner in New York, a colleague of mine on the gas, she's also the co-chair of the Neighborhood Gas Committee, she said in New York, they can't even, there's so much resistance to building the gas pipelines that they can't have enough reliability in their gas supply. They have to trigger people, customers, the interruptible customers, to switch over to fuel oil at an earlier temperature. So like at 40 degrees instead of 30 degrees. So they're using more because they can't be assured of the supply and they can't build more pipelines to bring the supply in. So that's the kind of backwards thinking that is driving this movement away from now natural gas. So it's very critical that we stay engaged in these national organizations and these national efforts to be up to speed on what's happening and to provide some balance to some of the discussions that are occurring out there. At the same time, we got a report from one of the fellows who follows the supply issue, showing that the U.S. power plant trends for emissions are already just a couple hundred metric tons per million CO2 away from meeting the 2030 clean power plant goal without the clean power plant being in place. So we're just a fraction above meeting that goal nationally without having the clean power plant. So, again, drives home the fact that we have carbon dioxide policy in the country already through the production tax credits and the investment tax credits, and that are driving renewable growth. And it really begs the question of why are we doing the clean power plan at all when the industry is already making the switches naturally by market forces and some of the incentives that are already in place. So I think that's a question that all three of us need to be continuing to ask on these national levels and get more involved in those discussions as opportunities are afforded to us to do so. So that's all the opening comments I have. Commissioner Christman,
Well, I don't have a lot of opening comments. I did spend, I thought, a very good most of the day at the Empower meeting over at, it had to be moved to the Ramada instead of at the BSC Energy Facility due to concerns about protesters and such. But it was a little jammed in over there, but I thought it was just a very good meeting, good panelists, a number of legislators, the entire congressional delegation, industry people. And I just want to commend President Scogan on continuing to focus a lot of BSC's work on energy, because it is a huge thing for North Dakota. In response to your comments about the CO2 emissions from the energy generation industry being close to the overall goal, I think one of my big concerns, I think North Dakota's is still a long ways from it specifically. Mm-hmm. The overall goal might be close to achievement, but I'm pretty sure that the activists won't rest until all states are properly punished. And so I think we still have a lot to worry about.
We do. I agree. We do have a lot to worry about. I think the question is, though, is it a national policy for a national goal, or does each state have to meet each one separately? I think there's a legitimate discussion that should occur, because the air travels across borders and, you know, internationally as well. So that's the questions that aren't being answered.
Correct.
Mr. Kalk.
Carrying the load for the commission today on all the agenda items, so I'll just wait till then.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thought you might spend some time talking about the UND football win this weekend, since there wasn't much to say about the Bison outcome.
I would agree with your comments. I noticed that the UND team is ranked in the top 20 nationally in FCS football, where the Bison slipped to number 4. So I will tell you, I'm hopeful that the UND team wins the Big Sky Conference, and we could face them in the second round or the first round of the playoffs.
That would be fun.
That would be excellent. So, and I did lose a bet with the South Dakota Commission, so I wanted to congratulate South Dakota and Chris Nelson, particularly on their victory on Saturday.
What's your payout?
I just did it.
Oh. That's too easy. You should make you wear rabbit ears or something.
Well, it could have gone the other way, so we both agreed that each team had an equal chance of winning or losing, so we didn't want to put ourselves in a no-win scenario.
Here's to loyalty, though, even on a down week.
That's right. But no, UND looked very good, Julie. I'm excited for them. They're playing really well. It'd be fun.
Ah, that would be. All right. So I don't have any items on the regular agenda, nor does Randy. So
you have
you're
all
up.
The agenda items?
You do. You're working the hardest today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order in Great Plains Natural Gas Company Gas Transportation Pearl Gold Service Agreements, case number PU16604.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. The little background here, Great Plains Natural Gas is a subsidiary, if you will, a division of MDU Resources Group, and Pearl Gold is a limited liability corporation company in the Wapton area, who actually owns and leases their facility to Cargill, and Cargill does a variety of ag-related operations over in the Wapton area. In September of this year, the commission issued a notice of filing, a notice of informal hearing, an opportunity for hearing. If anyone wanted it to begin, they had let us know by September 21st, which we also had an informal that day. Basically, the long and short of it here is that Great Plains has an agreement in place for many years with Pearl Gold on transporting and selling gas to them, and the contract was up for renewal. One of the things that's unique about this particular motion and my discussion is that the company, Great Plains, has asked for trade secret protection on all the data on cost and pricing. So normally I would say that this is the cost and this is what it is, but today I will not be saying that. The commission reviewed the trade secret information, and I believe it's just and reasonable for what Great Plains return gets. I think it's fair to the company Pearl Gold. We did have the informal, and really one of the big discussion points that we had during the informal was just to get a feel for what really goes on here. Great Plains, all of their customers are in the Wapton area. And this Pro Gold is actually, I would say, an anchor tenant for this Great Plains system in that area. And so the discussion that takes place, that took place between Great Plains and Pro Gold, there's a discussion about what the transportation costs would be and all those related costs. And really what it comes down to is an agreement that both those companies come into. And when we reviewed the agreement, I think it made good sense for Great Plains because it helped spread the cost of their services throughout the how to explain this a little bit better. By having Pro Gold's cost, it really reduces some of the other costs to the other related members in the system. It's just and reasonable. I certainly think that. A little background. What this does is it brings it contract through 2027. There is an exit clause for both parties after 5 years if one of the parties wants to remove themselves from the agreement. And really, the reason it's trade secret has been asked for is that, you know, it's a negotiation. Pro Gold has an operation that they want to get the best cost they can. MDU has, or Great Plains, has offered to them what they feel appropriate cost to continue this relationship. And if you make this public information, you may get into all kinds of different kinds of bidding wars, if you will. And I think other people can certainly approach Pro Gold and make those kind of discussions. But this order today, I think, really makes good sense. It's good to see that Great Plains is continuing the relationship with Pro Gold and Wapton area because, as my colleague was talking about, just natural gas and many uses, it's good to keep these kind of things in place. And, you know, this is a long-term contract, so I like that on both sides of it, and I think it really helps out all parties. And it's the first time that I've dealt with something like this since I've been here, and it makes sense today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Okay, item BK2. I move the commission suspend the rates, reduce the filing fee to $10,000, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Northern State Power Company's Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2017 rates, case number PU16658.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. In February of 2014, the commission issued an order approving a transmission cost recovery TCR rider pursuant to North Dakota Century Code for NSP beginning a whole suite of projects. And the initial rate was about $0.002 per kilowatt. When we first dealt with this back in 2014, I could go through, I guess, 20 different power lines that were initially part of this rider, all the way from the Big Stone to Brookings line, Lake Marion, Glencoe. There's just Black Dog, all kinds of transmission lines, and Cass County sub-expansion is one of those that's a little closer to home. A suite of projects that fell into what Xcel Energy needed to pay their portion of it for, whether it's in MISO or their own facilities. And so the initial costs were just what I stated. But over the years, also in 2015, we had additions to those transmission costs. Locally, there was the Minot load serving line. There was NSP major line rebuild due to some storms, end-of-life replacements on transformers. And what we have this year is the additional cost requested that increased the cost from what I said initially of about, you know, not even quite a cent per kilowatt to go to about 46 cents per kilowatt. So there is a request they're asking for of about, you know, 40-some cents per month for the average customer. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 5th of 2016. I believe we've already got this scheduled for an informal on November 30th, but if someone wants a hearing, we'll certainly do that. And one of the things, just in reviewing it, certainly not made any decisions yet, but, you know, what is the driver now? This tariff has been in place for 2 years. Why the increase, if you will? And what's happened is a lot of these lines that we initially were put into the tariff have now, the construction is really increased in a lot of them. A lot of them are almost complete. The CapEx lines, the La Crosse to Wisconsin line, the Big Stone 345 kV line, end-of-life replacements, and some of the other subs. There's a Minn Kota Power interconnection that's moved forward. And so what you have is these projects that started out initially in the tariff are now nearing completion or completed and are getting fully into the rate base. So that's kind of what I've read in the initial filing, and I look forward to the informal or the hearing to ask more questions. I talked about this being the year of the transmission line. I think the pipeline down Dakota Access may have switched that a little bit, but the transmission
still
is
still pushing for it.
Still pushing for the year of the transmission line. I think long term, our transmission investments are really going to be the driver of our state. But anyway, this certainly looks appropriate. I do look forward to the informal because I am continue to be concerned about how these transmission costs get shifted to the investor-owned utilities and making sure that we are understanding exactly what costs they're incurring. And I saw where Otter Tail Power joined in with some of the southern states in our country with a filing in front of FERC right now where some of the southern states want to change the way costs are allocated and what the North Dakota has and now with its right of first refusal on transmission build. I see where Otter Tail has weighed in on that. So I've talked to Jerry and Vic a little bit about that, but there continues to be a movement around the country. Not only do folks want our generation, they want us to pay for all of their transmission lines to move our generations to those areas, and I think it should be an appropriate cost share, which is what we have now. So this order, motion today, I believe is in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a couple of thoughts on this one. We're seeing the cost of transmission go up, and I agree with you, the year of transmission. I think it's going to be a decade of transmission as we refresh the whole generation and transmission system nationwide, as we incorporate a lot of the new mandates, environmental mandates, as you see the independent transmission operators really kind of take control, and there's just a lot being driven by those organizations that we don't have a lot of direct influence on. So Commissioner Kalk's been carrying the lion's share of that transmission, the MISO and SPP burden for the commission. And when my time as chair is up, I'm going to be joining you and helping get more involved in those organizations because I do think that they have they have a lot of power and influence on our customers and the rates that they're paying, and we need to be involved there as much as we can. The other thing that these investments are, there's a lot of focus on how do we improve reliability. I hear that a lot in Fargo. This is one of the ways, improving the transmission system is a reliability issue. And it's also incorporating the new renewables that we're seeing. So when people respond, do you want cleaner power? Do you want, you know, to use more renewables? Do these kinds of policy changes make sense? And people say yes. I'm not questioning that response, but they need to realize that it comes with a cost. And these are some of the costs. New transmission systems to connect the wind and incorporate it into the grid, to connect the solar, incorporate that into the grid. That's all part of this major transformation that's occurring. And so we're going to be seeing these ongoing cost increases as this happens.
Is there any further discussion?
Just one more thought on the power grid. My time in the commission, and we can talk about different things that have happened. One thing I think is a big success story for North Dakota is just how much better the North Dakota power grid is now than it was 8 years ago. You think about the major 345 lines that have come in front of the commission in the last 8 years, a lot of the smaller 230s and the 115s that have been built around the state. You know, with the energy boom, we had a lot of increased requirement for transmission, which I think the companies have done a nice job. We also refreshed a lot of the power grid. So I think the North Dakota grid is looking, I think, very good right now. We need to keep working on, as you talked about, reliability in some of the distribution centers. But it's important to have the right investment and pay for what's appropriate. But as you pointed out, I don't think we should be paying for transmission lines in Louisiana that not directly benefit us at all. And that's kind of the way this MISO discussion goes, where we're asked to potentially be paying for some of those lines when they don't necessarily are paying for those lines up here.
Just to add on, Madam Chair, to your comment about recognizing that with changing to more renewables, people need to understand there is that cost of transmitting that power. But it even goes beyond that, in that most times where there are good wind resources, there doesn't just happen to be a major gas pipeline under there where they can build the backup to that wind in the same location and use the same new transmission lines to transmit the backup power at the same time they could back up there or use the renewable. So it's not only the cost of the transmission for the renewable source, but also the cost of the transmission from whatever the backup source is going to be. So
Really, and the cost of the pipeline to feed that gas plant as well.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK3. I move the commission acknowledge the October 13, 2016 electronic submittal of the 2017 Pipeline Safety One Call Grant application in the amount of $60,000, Public Service Commission 2017 One Call Grant application, case number GS16664.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. The commission has, over many, many years, submitted this Pipeline Safety One Call Grant. And in the past, what it has really been, it's been a $10,000 request to help increase the awareness of how important damage prevention is. It's been $10,000 that we've asked for and traditionally has been approved. We use that for billboards is really what it comes down to. The state, we put out a few billboards that we work with the One Call Association on, you know, the Call Before You Dig program. I know MDU kicks in and so does Otter Tail. But this year's grant, you'll notice that I talked about $60,000. What we're asking for this time is also an additional $50,000 in compliance enforcement, the actual cost of the enforcement and complaint investigations. This is one thing that I don't know exactly when we started this discussion with PHMSA, but, you know, trying to always figure out ways to do a better job of enforcing what the law is, making sure we have the right resources. When one of the PHMSA folks was up here, they talked about, why aren't you applying for this grant? And I said, well, quite honestly, we didn't think about it. But we, now that we became aware of it, I talked with our staff. And what this does, if PHMSA approves this and it comes back to us, this will be $50,000 that we can use for dedicated staff to do the compliance investigation around incidents of one-call enforcement, where, quite honestly, we've had one staff individual almost dedicated exclusively this past year to one-call enforcement. So this money could be used all the way from a temporary position to come in and do just that. It could be a way of to take some of the costs in the general fund that normally would fund this to this grant. But I appreciate PHMSA's making us aware of this and appreciate Pat and Aaron and Craig's and everyone's work on this. We'll see how it all plays out. But it continues, I think, to reinforce the importance of the relationship with us and PHMSA and keeping those discussions alive. I should also make note of, the commission has already applied for the Gas Pipeline Safety Program base grant, and that's the grant that we apply for that basically funds the roughly 60-some percent of what Aaron and Craig do, our inspectors, and part of Pat's time. So to kind of separate it out so this doesn't get confused with the other one, this is not the base grant we put forward. This is an additional one, and we'll see what all plays out, but I think it's the right thing to do, and I look forward to seeing how it plays out this year.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
So is this for the Calk Before You Dig billboards?
Yeah, absolutely.
So did I understand you to say that this can be used for the enforcement stuff? That's not a separate grant? I thought we had to apply for a separate grant for that.
There's one.
Or is this it?
No, it depends how you slice it up, I guess. If we want to have Aaron and Craig be able to do more of the investigation on gas stuff, this should help out on that.
Oh.
If we want to get more into where they're actually being the one up here processing the cases, it's a fine line, I guess. The way I understand this from Pat is that if Aaron and Craig are doing work dealing with their investigation internally, this, of course, can help cover that, and some of that can come out of the existing grant. This is something, let's say Victor wants to do a thing, and he's dealing with it. Some of Victor's time could come out of this. But
so,
there's an
okay.
additional grant that we could ask for if we wanted Aaron and Craig to do more, but I thought anyway, that let's start with this and see how we can incorporate this part of it into it.
So that's where the $50,000 for that enforcement, that's significant.
Absolutely. If this comes through, I mean, we have not talked about it at all, but I thought immediately if we could hire an individual to do just this, because we do spend a lot of time with it. So I think right now it's see where it comes out. Because as the changes we've had in public utilities, there's not as much manpower as there was over there. So
we're just submitting this. We haven't received it.
It hasn't
been approved.
Right. We submitted electronically. This just acknowledges that we submitted it.
And how did we come up with the $60,000? Like, was there a cap for the $50,000 request for the one call enforcement?
I'm going to have to ask Pat if there was a cap. I know the $10,000 is kind of what we've been capped on for years for the billboards. And I think the $50,000 was a discussion of what we thought would be appropriate, but I don't know if that was the high end.
Okay. Good. Well, I'm glad. I didn't realize we were doing this, so I'm glad to know that we've pursued this. Good job.
We'll see how it works out.
What's usually been the timing of getting response from them as to whether a grant application is approved?
Well, there's no set timing, but typically we have the right discussion with them. We prep the battlefield, if you will. We submit the grant, and within a couple months we know. So, Pat, can you answer that question better than me? The one, was there a cap? And yes. And then this, what was the cap?
$60,000.
Okay.
Yeah, grab a mic, will you, Pat?
The One Call Grant has three levels of projects that you can do. And in those three levels of projects, the maximum you can ask for is $60,000. We asked for a level one project and a level three project.
Okay, and that was the second question you just asked me? I already forgot.
The timing.
Oh, the timing. When do we usually know?
It takes them to respond to a grant application.
That's all over the place, but we'll probably hear in about, I would say, within 4 months.
So I guess two or three, so yeah. But the point, I guess, is I feel pretty good about there'll be something that'll come out of this because we've kind of prepped it with FIMS, and it may not be the full amount, and we'll just have to see. But if we don't ask, we know we're not going to receive it.
Good. Nice job, Pat.
Is there any discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that concludes my portfolio, which was the 100% content of the Commission's report of the meeting.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Just in case again, listener audience didn't know that.
In case somebody missed it the first two times.
You know, somebody will use that, and I won't say it was only three motions. I'll say there was one meeting where Randy had 25 grain elevator motions.
Yes. Okay, so that concludes our regular agenda items. We can open up for questions.
Okay, back to BK2, if I could.
Yes, sir.
Did you say 46 cents on the average? Or?
Okay, the rider is in effect right now is basically about, well, I would say less than 1 cent per kilowatt. Mm-hmm. The rate they're asking for would increase it about 46 cents per month.
46 cents a month, okay.
For the average customer using 750 kilowatts per year. Yeah, the numbers are so small. So it'd be an increase of 0.46 cents, and the current is 0.002. So really, it's you figure about 46 cents a month. And that's where the discussion I had about, okay, this is, you know, percentage-wise, a pretty big jump in the cost. And then we'll have to dig deeper into it, of course, in the informal or the hearing. But basically my read is these projects over the last few years that they've got inside the rider, the costs have not fully been implemented till this year. They got them in early, and as the construction has been completed, there's more costs that are associated with it. And we'll see how the numbers exactly shake out.
I don't want to I'm a little confused by this. I think the rate that they're asking is 0.0029. That's what they're asking for, which results in 0.46 per month increase. But from this filing, right. I'm not seeing what they're currently paying. You know, so that's going to be one of my questions as I dig into this is what's the current, how much is the average customer currently paying per month? And then 46 cents more is what this would be.
You are correct, Julie. I misread that. You're absolutely correct. Sarah, if you're out there by chance. Is that what's that just ran out?
It's a fairly sizable. It's a $6.7 million revenue requirement. So it's a pretty substantial amount of new projects being added or additional costs.
No, you're absolutely right, Julie. That's the 0.002 cents per kilowatt, which results in an increase of 46 cents. Sarah, did you come up with an answer to my colleague's question, which was a good one? Or Dave's question?
You want to know what they're currently paying
right.
per month.
An increase of 0.46 cents per month is requested. What is the current rate?
Oh, I see the present rate. The present rate was 0.00234.
Right. And
okay. So it was what I said, but I read the wrong line.
That means currently they pay $1.75 per month, And with the 46-cent increase, they would be paying $2.21 per month.
Okay, so that's a much different picture than I painted. Okay. So, yeah, $1.75 per month is the current rate increase of requested of roughly 46 cents to $2.21 per month. Okay. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, it's hard to get to the bottom of these fractions of cents when the rates are written that way. So, okay.
Point is, you've got some questions of Excel, and you know what's driving this.
Absolutely, the suite of projects, like we've got probably 30 some transmission projects, and how they allocate costs and all these different projects has always been a controversial topic. So we might actually just have them go through and look at what cost allocation is in a lot of these. And some of them are MISO projects, so there's the MISO cost allocation formula. Some would be perhaps all of their projects. So just making sure we really understand how they're allocating these costs. And as we go forward, I talked about the Otter Tail intervention into the FERC case. A small change in what the cost allocation can be inside these transmission organizations could result in a huge cost shift for the North Dakota customers.
So there's currently 30 projects included in this that have already been approved by us?
Correct.
And, Sarah, how many more are they proposing to add? It looks to me like
the interconnection
one,
is the one that
and then the MISO stuff, yeah.
Well, but it's
MISO
also
costs.
Part of the costs that have been approved, if you will, there's, as those projects continue construction, there's more costs that are added into that project. So,
mm-hmm.
like, when you do something in the 2014 rider, it's just that portion of the money that was spent that year. And now they spent more in 15 and more in 16. So the costs accumulate in the project throughout the life cycle of construction.
Right.
So we've hit the construction completion in a lot more of these projects is the way I'm understanding it.
So I'm not able to tell, and I wasn't when I looked at this earlier either, if they're adding a bunch of new projects or if it's just the additional costs of the existing 30 projects that are already included in this rate.
My read was the FOSSUM, the Minn Kota Power Corruption Interconnection, is
the only new one
in this.
Okay.
So it's the other ones getting more cost occurred in the construction of them.
And then the MISO Schedule 26A costs, which we always have included in this. There's an update on those. Okay. So, Nick, did you have questions?
Oh, I was just wondering if you might be able to clarify one more time what that $50,000 on BK3 would potentially be used for again.
I'm going to let Pat answer that question specifically because I don't think I did a nice job of it. Because all the different triggers about mm-hmm. what we could do.
I guess layman's terms, if that's possible.
Well, I mean, for me, the layman terms, I think that we'll be able to use staff time that we'll be able to apply to this grant to release to have general funds to do something else. But, Pat, maybe you can give some more specifics on that.
That's correct. The money would be used to cover the expense the commission incurs when it processes damage prevention one-call complaint cases.
But one of the questions that I don't think I answered fully was the ability. There's some hooks where Aaron and Craig's time, it doesn't necessarily can't go to this grant because of different scenarios. Isn't that how we talked about it?
This particular grant allows the commission to offset any cost of any of its damage prevention cases, whether it's a gas pipeline or other pipeline or any other underground buried facility. There's another grant that we are looking at that would allow us to charge Craig and Aaron's time to damage prevention separately.
Okay.
So there's a lot of timekeeping and timesheet work involved too as well, but to track commit the staff time and for the different projects.
So, Nick, just to give you a little of the background, the commission does all the investigations on when there's a damage prevention case, when there's a complaint, like a utility calls and said, so-and-so contractor damaged our pipeline. Or then we have to go out and figure out what happened and if it's legitimate. And then sometimes that results in an agreement, a consent agreement where the contractor pays and that's said and done. And sometimes it goes all the way to a hearing, as in yesterday we had a hearing on a case. All those costs currently are covered in the general fund. We don't have specific, fees that we charge or anything and get paid. This grant would help us offset some of those costs with these PHMSA dollars, basically, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Federal grant dollars.
Yep.
And I think one thing that is very often misunderstood about the process that this, or I'm sure many other agencies go through that have enforcement responsibilities, if, say, someone has a commits a violation, does some damage, and we have a case, and we impose, a $10,000 penalty upon them and they pay it, and we have rung up thousands of dollars of investigation costs, that comes out of our general fund appropriation. The penalty goes to the state general fund. So,
we don't
collecting penalties has nothing to do with our funding.
And you said that this was the first time you guys were dealing with this, I guess. Was this something that had ever been under consideration before? I guess why wasn't this maybe considered before? Or was it as much of an issue maybe before? Or?
I would say that, you know, the commission, based on some discussion in the legislature back in like 2007, 8, 2009 was the first time the commission really started enforcing the damage prevention cases because it was kind of vague in law who should actually do it. So about the same time I got here is when the commission first started enforcing these, and I think we really went to the, you know, the crawl, walk, run mode where we made sure the first cases we processed, we did it correctly. We started dedicating more staff time to it. And then quite honestly, over the last couple of years, it's quite honestly, you know, mushroomed into quite a very robust program where probably done, you know, over 100 of these, where now the budget impacts, like Randy and Julie talked about, of impact to the general fund are becoming, I'd say, significant. And given the budget drawdown, we already have enough challenges working with a 10% cut in general funds that this seemed to be appropriate. And when PHMSA offered it up, we certainly took the opportunity to follow through on it.
It seems like it's primarily been just this biennium that we're in right now that pipeline operators have kind of chosen to start bringing significant volume of these complaints. There were complaints brought over the years, but not this kind of volume. So it just never, I don't think, was nearly as big of a deal to our staffing and to our agency budget as it has become right now.
So about how much time and staff and whatnot is kind of put into this at this point? Or
you know, this would be just my... What's the word I'm looking for? My educated guess on time, and Pat maybe follow me up here, but we've got Victor Shook that he's probably, I would say, spent two-thirds of his time this last year just doing damage prevention. I spent a lot of time with Victor on the damage prevention as well as he does some of the SPP stuff, and so that's just my kind of thought process. Pat, could you clean that up a little bit, what you think?
Well, I think that would be pretty close. In addition to Jack, we have an attorney that works on
In addition to Victor, Jack would be our attorney.
Yep, sure. That works on consent agreements, or if we have a hearing, Jack will represent the advocacy staff. And then we also have staff that works on the commission advisory side, that their time will be recorded as well and somewhat reimbursable by this $50,000. $50,000 won't nearly cover our expenses.
But it helps. It helps offset. And it helps us stay, you know, focused on the enforcement piece of it, which is really important to the owners of the underground infrastructure. And it's in important long term for the safety of the workers as well, that these laws are vigorously enforced.
Yeah, one of the things, and I guess we could talk for days on this, but when the PSC does a hearing, whether it's something as big as a 345 kV transmission line or a damage prevention case with an individual that allegedly hit a power line or a pipeline, the staff process is just as much. They go through all the same filings, all the same this. I mean, it's a huge amount of time and effort. So it's not like there's less of a due process for something that's as small as a call for a dig complaint, because it's the same PSC process.
Certainly this increased workload in damage prevention was part of our request for a second or an additional public utility analyst back. Was that the last session?
Two sessions ago, we asked for an additional inspector. In this last session, we asked for that basically SPP person and another person in public utilities to do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and so that's been, you know, part of the workload of an additional staff person in our public utilities division was devoted to this. Anything else?
Just one quick question on consent. The CBK 4.
Okay, let's have a look. See,
that's the capital versus Montana Dakota Utilities.
Oh, yes, I reviewed that one.
And that is?
Basically, they had a follow-on case they were pursuing in front of us and resulted a Supreme Court basically upholding the commission's decision supporting MDU. They withdrew this case because they felt there was correlations to it that they no longer wanted to push that position.
Was it service to the railroad light switch or something? There was service provided to a railroad switch, light switch or something in that same Menards corridor. And they were arguing over who was going to provide that. And once it got settled out that MDU was going to provide at the Menards site, then Capital Electric said, well, obviously if they're going to provide there, they should provide to the railroad piece, which is right adjacent to it.
We do look at the stuff on consent day. Most of the time.
Anything else? All right. Then we will, do we want to keep going straight into?
I'm fine to keep rolling.
Go straight into discussion? Well, sure. Really, mostly it's scheduling. So, okay. We will,